Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Microsoft. I'm super excited to be here today and have a chance to welcome you here. How many of you have been to Microsoft before? Raise your hands. A few? Okay, good. Well, this is the first time that we actually open the doors up to the community for such an event. So today is a bit of an experiment. So we hope that you enjoy the day. It's going to be a fantastic and fun opportunity for you all to get a chance to build some skills, have some fun, and hopefully get creative. I'd like to welcome you all and welcome especially Richard Conway. Richard Conway is the leader of the Azure User Group, so AzureCraft is really his event because it's something that we have decided to collaborate on, but it's his brainchild. And so we've had this two-day journey so far, really kicking things off yesterday in London for the whole developer community, and then today is all about families and giving you all a chance to learn. So over to you, Richard.
Yeah, absolutely. So good morning, everybody. It's really, really early, isn't it? So all the grown-ups need some coffee, and I think everybody else needs some soft drinks over there. So we put together the idea of AzureCraft. Alan's in the front with me. We came up with 6 pages of notes because we wanted to create the next generation of programmers, and it's absolutely wonderful to see so many kids here. Yesterday we had a conference where we had a bunch of programmers learning all about the Microsoft Cloud. And this is what we're going to be learning about today, through space, through the new Internet of Things, and all of these cool things that you'll get to do. So I think with that, we are going to be turning over to Dave Coplin.
That's right. So I'm going to be the third guy who welcomes you to Microsoft. I have a special role for Microsoft. My job title, which I invented myself, is I'm the Chief Envisioning Officer, which basically means I get to talk to people about the future all the time. And the best bit about today is normally I'm talking to people about what the future is going to be like for them, right? Today I'm talking to the people who are going to make the future. All of the kids, all of you, you're the guys who are going to make all of this stuff happen. And we've got to remember, we live in really, really amazing times. Technology today is so good, and there's so much happening, we sometimes forget how quickly it's changing. So the point about technology is it enables us to do amazing things. And what's great today is you're all gathered here because you want to talk about the technology. You want to understand what it means. So I've got a chart here. Can anybody tell me what type of chart this is? The kids, do anybody know what type of chart this is? Yes, you. A line graph. There's a line graph, but there's a special name. Anybody know? Shout it out. It's an exponential graph. And the special thing about exponential graphs is what happens is it talks about growth in the future, and it actually multiplies. It gets faster and faster as the future goes on. Do you know the best bit about this graph? This graph shows the amount of times that somebody has said the words exponential growth over the last 60 years, right? Because we live in fantastic times. Everything's changing. We have amazing technology at home. You've got, hands up if you have a computer at home. Yeah, of course we all do. And what a fantastic world that is, right? We shop online, we play online. I bet you've got grandparents or parents or people who Skype to you from wherever they are in the world. Give us amazing experience of technology in your personal lives. And then people go to work. And this is how people feel about technology. Really boring, right? This is not what we should do. This is not the world that you guys are going to create. We're going to do different things, because the best thing about all of you is you have really high expectations. You have amazing experiences in what you do with your personal lives with technology, whether it's playing with your friends online, whether it's shopping, whether it's communicating. And those expectations are the things I want you to carry with you, because you've got a big job to do. You've got a massive job to do, because we struggle today. Do you know what happens at work? Most people work like this guy. Most of the ways that we work, the processes, the tools we use, were kind of designed in the 19th century, 200 years ago. We work like Victorians today, only we use new technology to make those old Victorian working practices a bit quicker, a bit better. We don't use that technology to change things. And on a good day, if we're really thinking about how cool technology is, we might share the odd cat video. Right? This, ladies and gentlemen, is not your future. Please do not let this be your future. There's nothing wrong with the odd cat video. I'm a bit partial to them myself. But it cannot be just this. There is so much more that we can do with technology, but we've got to break free. Your job, kids, is to wake up the grown-ups. You've got to show them how good this stuff is. You've got to show this stuff how it's going to change the world. Because when you do that, you create the future. You become the future, and that's what we need from you, all of you. So we need you to start thinking about how we help everybody else break through this digital barrier. We see the incredible potential that technology can bring all of our lives, not just at work, not just at play, everybody, everywhere. And it means that we've got to start to think differently about what happens. Now, when I was a kid, the only technology we really had was the technology we could see on the telly, right? And I grew up and I was a bit of a Star Trek nut. What a surprise, hey, right? This is my 8th birthday party. It's my mum and my auntie Mabel, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, all I could do is once a week for 50 minutes, I could stare at the TV and I could dream. Star Trek taught me this amazing lesson that technology is supposed to be a force for good in our society. It's this thing that enables human beings to rise up and achieve more than they could do in their lives. I couldn't do anything about it, though, not till I got older and got a job. Your world is different. Because the things you have at home, the consoles, the computers, that means you can get involved. We even have days like today, you can come and help build a satellite. How amazing is that? This is a wonderful world for us to live in. And we're surrounded by some incredibly transformational technologies, technologies that will change our world forever. Can anybody give me, think well, what's the most transformational technology that any of you have seen maybe in the last, I don't know, 5 years? Anybody shout it out? Office 365, excellent. What a great option, Lillian. Brilliant. Anybody else? Windows 10, yeah, great. Thank you, John. Of course, a very, very serious answers, but that's not the answer I'm looking for, because what I think is the most transformational technology that any of us have seen in the last 5 years. Put your hand up if you play Minecraft. Shout if you love Minecraft. Yeah, there we go, right? Because the best thing about Minecraft is it taught all of you guys, all of you little guys, that you can make stuff. It taught you about how technology is creative. It's not about coding, it's about making things. It's about collaborating with your mates, building amazing structures, and then blowing them up, right? What an amazing tool. So I love Minecraft because it's created aspiration in all of you about to want to do stuff with technology, to want to create, and that's a really special thing for us to be. Because right around the corner are some really important technologies. Technologies like machine learning and artificial intelligence. These are the future. Getting the machines to do a lot of our work for us, not to replace us, but to think differently. These things that we're working on, this machine learning, will change the way we live. It will change how we relate to each other. It will change how we even think about what it means to be human. And it's already started today. Microsoft has a technology that you can all try at home. And it uses the power of machine learning to deliver real-time speech-to-speech language translation. We demonstrated it a few years ago. We had a gentleman who speaks German connected to a lady who speaks English, connected via Skype. The gentleman speaks German, the lady hears English. Lady speaks English, the gentleman hears German. Real-time, no human beings involved. Just some amazing, amazing work going on with algorithms. I love this as an example because it makes me think about how different our future is going to be. I have a 10-year-old son. Stand up, John. Say hi, everybody. Right, thanks, John. Okay, you can sit down or you can come up if you want, buddy. Do you know what? You could probably do this. You've seen it enough times. The thing that I think about this technology and him is, do I bother to get this guy to learn a foreign language at school? Because when he enters his world of work, it's going to be a redundant skill. Now, I get that's provocative, and I get there are lots of reasons why we learn foreign languages, and I'm terribly sorry, John, but you are going to learn a couple of languages at school. Thanks, buddy. Come and sit down. And the thing is, but as a result of this technology, when he emerges from his education, not only will he be able to speak one or two languages, he'll be able to speak another 152 languages fluently. He'll be able to travel the world communicating with locals as if he were a local. This will fundamentally change his cultural experience. It's an amazing world that we live in, and this is just one example. Now, if you want to know how machine learning works, here's a brilliant example. There was some really good research done a few years ago that shows if you speak English, as long as I keep the first and last characters of the word in the right place, I can mix up all of the other characters. I can even misspell words, and you'll still be able to read the text. Can you read the text, guys? Yeah. And there are two reasons why this is a great example of machine learning. The first is it's completely contradictory to the way that we're taught language at school. It's complete. How many of you love English at school? Yeah? How many of you want to show off to your English teacher next time you see them when you're back at half term? Okay, because there's a little trick, right? The way this works is that when we're at school, they think that language is logical. They try to teach us all of these rules. They teach us things like, has anybody taught you the I before E except after C rule yet? Have they talked to that yet? Well, what they don't tell you is that there are 923 exceptions to that rule. There are more, I'm breaking some rules today, I tell you. There are more exceptions to that rule than there are to the rule itself. Language isn't logical. It doesn't follow rules, it follows patterns. And as humans, we know this, right? Because from the day we learn to read until the day you die, you create, curate, and tend to your own pattern of language. Every time you read something, you're making your pattern a little bit better. This is exactly how algorithms work. It's just how they work. And the second reason why this is a great example, because it shows you the limitation of algorithms. Because what do you think happens when I show this slide to somebody who's just beginning to learn to speak English? Or if I'd shown it to you guys, maybe when you were 4 or 5 years old and you're just forming your own language skills. You can't read it because you haven't got a pattern. You haven't built enough of the pattern. And this is our job as humans for the next few years, the next decade or so. It's our job to make those patterns, to make them make sense. And this is where we come in at Microsoft. We have a really, really special purpose and a passion, and you'll find it in anybody who works for Microsoft, or anybody who works with our partners, Richard and his team. You come and ask us why we do what we do. It's one simple reason. We'll use different words, but it's one simple reason. We all believe that technology is an amazing power for good in our lives. And our job is, I don't care who you are, I don't care how old you are, I don't care what job you want to do, I bet you we can use technology to make it better. And I want you all to help me build that world. This is Microsoft's mission, to create the tools that make this possible. And we're really lucky at Microsoft because we get to think about the future all the time. And I want to play you a video now. This is a video that was set in the future. This is some of our guys thinking about what the future might look like. This, kids, will be your future. But there's one problem. You've got to help us build it. Now, the best bit about that video is everything you saw there, number one, is completely made up. All of the products and all that stuff, it's all fabricated. We invented it like you would make a film, except for one thing. The guys who make that video have one sort of rule, that they can't show a concept in that video unless the technology already exists in our labs. So everything you saw there, the holograms without the dorky headset, the different ways of interacting, the full-length screens, that all exists in our labs. This is going to be your world, but we need your help to build it. And if we're going to do that, we've got to get you excited about this stuff. We've got to get you equipped with the right kind of skills. We cannot do this without your help. And I don't mean we as in Microsoft, I mean we as the human race. This is the challenge that lies in front of you. And in order to do that, kids, this is especially for you, there's some things that you've really got to think about. Number one, data is your friend. You may think it's just a bunch of boring numbers and words, but actually your ability to use data like magic is the thing that will help you build the tools that create the opportunities for all of the things that you want to do. So listen to your maths teacher. Get them talking about computational stuff. Get them talking about how you look at data. You've got to do some things to look after yourselves as well. The internet is a really scary place sometimes. We've got to look after each other. We've got to make sure that we keep each other safe, that we look after. And in particular, we've got to behave responsibly. Part of the problem with the internet is it's really easy for people to misbehave, to be naughty. That's not cool. That doesn't help anybody. So we've got to think of it in a different way. We've also got to find out in our lives about where technology can help us and where it can't. Now, I know it's hard for many of us to believe that there are times in our lives where technology can't help you. I'll give you a few clues. When you're sitting at the dinner table with your parents, right? If you catch them, and this is not about you kids, this is about them, right? If you catch them looking at their phones while you're sitting eating your dinner, you say, hang on a minute, I thought we were having dinner. If you're sitting watching a movie with them and you see that your mum and dad or your carer or whoever starts drifting off onto Facebook, tap them on the shoulder. Hang on a minute, I thought we were watching a movie together. Because understanding where the technology can help us and can't help us makes sure that we have the right relationship with technology in our lives. We've got to do some really important things. We've got to use the thing that sits between our ears. We've got to do things like critical thinking. When you read something on the internet, does that mean it's true? No, good. What do you do if you wanted to? You want to find out some more? If you see something there, do you go and look at it for it somewhere else? Do you go and find another source of information? Of course you do. Critical thinking is a really important skill for you to get through your future. But most of all, you've got to think differently. Just because things have been done the way they've been done for the last 200 years doesn't mean they have to go on being done that way. Your job is to see things a little differently, to see, actually, do you know what? Maybe we don't have to do this way. Maybe we could think in another way. And this is where you kids have the best opportunity to make this happen, because you can be creative with technology. You can see it as this wonderful thing. Now, I want to tell you a little story about creativity, and actually it's down to John again, my son. He gave me the best ever present when I was a couple of years ago for my birthday. And what he did is he made me something. Now, you don't know John like I know John, but John making something is a big achievement, right? I was pretty impressed with this. This is what got me out of bed. He says, Dad, I've made you something. Come and see. He drags me downstairs, we go into the living room, he turns on the TV, he says, what's he made? Turns on the console. I'm like, come on, John, I thought I was getting a birthday present. This is not about playing console. He goes into Minecraft, little glint in his eye. Now, at the time, I used to work for Bing, our search engine. You know Bing, it's a bit like Google, but better, right? I'm here all week. And he took me to this world he'd made in Minecraft, and there in this world, Minecraft was the thing you see before you, was the Google logo perfectly rendered in Minecraft blocks. And I'm thinking, well, that's a bit tight. You know that I love Bing and Google's kind of the competition. That's not very nice. He said, Dad, you don't understand. He took me to the little side just off camera here. There was a little wooden sign. And on the wooden sign, it's a little arrow pointing downwards. And it said, press me. And underneath the sign was a little red button. And what I didn't know is he'd spent most of the night basically putting TNT under the Google logo. What do you think happened when I pressed the button? Best birthday present ever. That's what happened, right? This is about the creativity of technology. It's about throwing away some of the rules, letting your imagination run wild. And in order to do that, you've got to be curious. Always, always be curious. There's a lovely quote from a lady called Dorothy Parker who said that the cure for boredom is curiosity. And there is no cure for curiosity. You have to be curious. You have to ask questions. Why does that work like that? Why do we do things like that? If you stay curious, then you can dream. And when you dream, you can come up with the kind of things that are going to make our world possible. You're going to make our lives possible. And this is where you kids have the best possible gift at all. Because as grown-ups, we've forgotten how to dream. We're so constrained by the way our lives are, we don't dream anymore. We just think about things as the next step forward. It's an iterative process. This is not our future. are opportunities to change. And so I wanted to talk to some dreamers, and that's why I'm so pleased that you're here today. I want you to dream big, and we interviewed some dreamers to get their thoughts about the future, and I want to introduce you to them now.
Cars in the future will be way smarter than cars now because you can select anything. It'll have a computer in it for you, a TV. You don't have to drive the car anymore. It'll do stuff for you. It'll travel faster. You can do anything with it.
Someday the house will be so smart it would know like what you want and what you like.
You would press this button and say what you would like, and then it would automatically come out every time.
Sometimes you wish that, oh, I wish I could have pizza right now. It would be like, whoosh.
But you gotta speak clearly, because you could say, hey, vegetables while coughing, and then something weird will come out, like some sort of weird new alien life form.
Someday they'll make this mirror that would make it look like you're wearing what you want to wear.
I would be a ninja and I could try a million outfits, and one of them would be red, one of them will be dark black, one of them will be light blue.
Someday, robots will help me do whatever I want.
Like, if you want to go to Paris, your robot will just, fly you there, express ride, or just teleport you there. And then give you a quick, and then organize all the tours for you and everything, and help you get used to the jet lag and stuff.
Like, they would, clean the room, they would fix the house.
Yeah, because, you know, with a little imagination, anything's possible.
So kids, I want you to continue to dream. I want you to enjoy today. I want you to get the most, be curious about today. And the funny thing is, right, it's really easy for me to talk about the future. I just get to talk about it, I get to dream, stuff is wonderful. Now I want to introduce you to somebody who's actually doing stuff about the future, actually is making things happen. And we're really, really lucky today to have Abby Hutton from Airbus, who's going to talk to us about all of the amazing work that she's been doing. Welcome Abby to the stage, please. Thanks, Abby.
I'm one of those adults that hasn't had any coffee this morning, so I'm going to struggle to follow that. But my name's Abby. I work for a company called Airbus, and I work in their space division. So that means I'm lucky enough to work on a project to put a rover on Mars. Now, I didn't always know I was going to do that. If you'd asked me while I was at school what an engineer does, which is what I am, this is the kind of pictures that would come into my mind. Kind of grubby job, fixing things. And then I saw on the news a mission to Mars, and I heard that British engineers and scientists were working on this mission to Mars. I thought, well, if that's engineering, I must have got it wrong, because that sounds pretty cool, actually. So I went to university, and I found out that engineering was all kinds of other exciting things, not just space, though space is clearly the coolest. There are things like green energy, there's robotics, there's dynamics, there's all of the things to do with like new planes and Formula One and all of that kind of thing. And all of these things are really cool and really inspirational, but I still wanted to make spaceships. So I went to work for Airbus, and I started off making bits that go on this mission to Mercury. They go there. That's going to launch next year. And then I made some other things that look a bit like this, and they go on telecommunication satellites where you get your Sky TV. They look like that in real life, and they go on there. And those things, some of them are going around the planet at the moment as we speak, which is pretty exciting. So that's what engineering did for me. But then an opportunity came up. My company was working on a mission to Mars, We were going to make a Mars rover to go there. So, of course, I couldn't say no to that. So I applied for a job on this project, and now I'm a structural engineer working on ExoMars. So what's ExoMars? I mean, we've sent rovers to Mars before. We've got all kinds of missions up there at the moment doing things. Why is ExoMars any different? Well, our mission has a very different stated objective to all of the missions that have gone before. All of the missions that have gone before have gone to look at Mars and to work out what's there. And some of their stated objectives have been to look for the conditions for life on Mars. Okay, what does that mean? That means we're looking to see if there's water there. If we go there and we live there, could we live there? Are there the right things on Mars to support us as life forms? Well, that's great, and it's very exciting to think about sending humans there, but our mission has a very different objective. We're looking for life on Mars, past or present. So is there actually life there at the moment? Not human life, not life from Earth. Is there different life on Mars? Are we alone in the universe? Is it just us? It's one of these big questions for humanity. So ExoMars is going to Mars and it's going to look for life that's already existing on Mars. We know there's water on Mars. We've seen methane on Mars, which normally only comes from biological processes, sometimes volcanoes, but we don't think there's any active volcanoes on Mars either. So where is it coming from? These are the questions that we really want to answer before we send humans to Mars. Because once you've sent a human to Mars, you've contaminated Mars with Earth life. You can't sterilize a human. You can sterilize a Mars rover. We have to. It's a massive pain in the butt, but you can. And then you make sure that you're not going to contaminate this planet with bugs, with germs, with bacteria that you've taken with you from Earth, with bits of human skin or hair that you could find in a sample and analyze and go, oh, look, it's life. But it wouldn't be Mars life. You wouldn't be answering that question. So that's what we're doing with our mission, looking for life, past or present on Mars. And the way we're going to do that is you've got a massive drill on the front. It's 2 meters long, that's taller than I am, that we're going underneath the surface. We're going to drive down into the surface of Mars where it's still protected from all of the radiation at the surface, where there's water under there, and where we think that life might still be lurking, or even if it's not still alive, where we might be able to find that life and know that there was life on another planet that didn't come from Earth. So that's where Bridget comes in. You might have seen my shiny friend out in the foyer. If not, you definitely need to go and visit her later. This is Bridget, and she is our prototype Mars rover. So a prototype basically means a working model. It's the very first full-scale model that we built to try and work out how to build a good Mars rover, because it's not exactly a one-step process. You don't just suddenly come up with a perfect Mars rover that's going to work. You have to build a model and try things out and improve it and improve it, and then you finally get to something that really works. So Bridget's quite old now. We first built her, I think, in 2006, 2007. So she has been all over the place. She has met all kinds of people. This is her meeting the science minister. She's actually met the last 6 science ministers. This is her meeting Angela Merkel and also the Polish prime minister here. This is her with Brian Cox and Dara Brehm on Stargazing Live. She's met Prince Philip. She has got all over the place. And just a couple of weeks ago, she was being driven by Tim Peake while Tim Peake was on the International Space Station. So he was up there on the International Space Station floating around in microgravity, and he was driving Bridget. Bridget was just in our lab in Stevenage, which is where I work, and he was controlling her from space, driving her around. So this is Bridget. She is a massive diva, by the way, for anyone that's not met Bridget. She likes nothing more than to crash just as you're about to go on live TV with her, or she's about to meet a really important VIP. That's what she really likes to do. But that's the whole point of her, is so that we can learn what things go wrong and when, and we can stop it from happening the next time. So she's a bit old and she's a bit clunky. She likes driving over rocks. She likes crashing in front of VIPs. Actually, when I took her to meet Angela Merkel and the Polish Prime Minister, they were on the stage. I was off the side. I was driving her towards them. And then there was a bit of interference, and I couldn't control her anymore. And she was just driving towards two heads of state, and I couldn't stop her. This is the kind of thing that Bridget likes to do. She likes to keep you on your toes. So she did stop, eventually, as I'm on the side going, stop, 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 stop. And there's a guy with a machine gun next to me going, is everything okay? He's a security guard. And I'm just like, ah, yes, fine. So Bridget we used to do all kinds of demonstrations of the technology that we're going to use on Mars. When Tim Peake was driving her, he had a little game to play. He had to drive into this dark cave. It is pretty dark. You can't see a lot going on in here. And it was to demonstrate a future scenario where there might be humans and rovers together, both far from Earth. So on Mars or going around a distant moon or something like that. And you might want to use that rover as a human being to help you in what you're doing there. So you might want to be building a base to live in, but it's not built yet, so you can't go down there and start working on it. You need your robot to do that for you. And you have to control your robot while you're also in space. So there's all of those problems that we haven't really had to encounter down here on Earth. You're floating around in microgravity. It's quite difficult to control just where you're floating, let alone what a robot's doing on another planet very close to you. There's all of these communication issues, like my interference with Angela Merkel. What if there's interference just as that robot's going to do something on the planet's surface that's really critical, and then the communication drops out? How do you deal with that? What does your robot decide to do when it stops getting signals from you? So all of those things were the kinds of things that we were trying to work out with this mission and getting Tim to do. Actually, he was just going around looking for glow-in-the-dark X marks, the spots on rocks, which sounds like quite a lot of fun, actually. But it did have a real science objective as well. So Bridget was the first, but she's just the first of a family of prototypes, because you never get it right the first time. You have to keep iterating your design, improving your design until you're happy that you've got something that's going to work absolutely perfectly. Especially going to Mars, you can't just go up there and fix it or go, oh, sorry, we got that bit wrong. We're just going to take this off and bolt this bit on instead. It has to work perfectly. So we've got a whole family of prototypes, and we haven't stopped yet. We're still going to build at least another one or two before we send the final version up in 2020. And it's not just me working on it. There's 140 people just at Airbus in Stevenage working on this mission, but there's people all over the world working on it as well. We're not the only company working on it. This is just most of our team. We don't get together all in one place very often, but for Christmas Jumper Day, we made an exception. So these are some of the cool dudes that work on the rover with me. I think his suit was mighty fine. So it's a mission that has lots of different people all around the world working for it. Primarily, it's us in the European Space Agency and our friends in Roscosmos, which is the Russian space agency. But we've got people from all over the world working on the mission as well. So it's not just the rover. There's also a part that you might have seen in the news that got launched in March, which is the 2016 mission, the Trace Gas Orbiter. And that's going to go over there first. It's going to land a little Schiaparelli lander on the surface, which is going to teach us about how to descend through the atmosphere and land safely on the surface. And then we've got our rover that's going there in 2020. And we've got instruments and equipment from all over the world going on that rover. Not just Europe and Russia, but also the USA, Canada, Israel, all kinds of people getting involved in this mission. But that's not going to be the end. That's not the last mission we're ever going to send to Mars. It's barely the beginning. We've got all of these visions. We've had visions for years of sending people to live on Mars, and now it's really likely to become a reality. In the next few years, we're going to be developing the technology that is going to take humans to Mars. We're going to be doing these things. But I'm not. You are. That's why you're here today. You've got to develop the skills. You've got to learn all the things and the creativity and the excitement and the passion that's going to drive you to make these things a reality. So, first of all, what do you need to do? STEM. They didn't pay me to say that. I really mean it. STEM is where it's all at. It really is the most exciting things that you can be doing at the moment, in my opinion. You need to be concentrating in your science subjects, your technology, your maths, and you need to be able to keep that enthusiasm, that curiosity, that passion alive, and think of the end goal, think of what you're going to apply it to, and have that spark of enthusiasm always. You need to take things apart, you need to look at them, you need to know why they work and why they don't. You need to not be afraid of things not working the first time. You have to keep iterating, keep improving your designs until you get something that works. It doesn't work first time, it never does. You just have to keep trying, keep improving until you get something that's really awesome. And then it's over to you. Who's going to take us to Mars? Whose boots are going to be the first ones crunching through the sand? Do you want to be that person? You can be that person. Do you not want to go to Mars? Does that sound a little bit risky? Okay, send someone else. You can be the one that makes a spaceship that goes somewhere that nobody's ever been before. And you can stay right here. There's all kinds of jobs for everyone, and I really expect you to be the people that are doing it. I'm really excited to see what you're going to do today, all the things that you're going to learn, how you're going to put it together, how your creativity is going to come up with things that we wouldn't have thought of ourselves. So, go out there, enjoy every second of it, and I really look forward to meeting you on Mars one day.
Thank you, Abby. That was fantastic. Great insight into space and missions. And it's all about exploring new frontiers. That's what today is all about, because today you have an opportunity to get your hands on the technology that will enable you to do creative and new things. And in fact, today we're launching a mission. We're launching a mission to give all of you an opportunity to join with us and build a nanosatellite. And so there's a whole session on nanosatellites. Chris Brunskill, could you come up on stage for a second? Chris is the inventor of the nanosatellite kit, which is going to enable you to do some really cool things. Do you want to say a few words about it?
Hi, everyone. Nice to see you all today. Thank you for coming along. So my job is quite boring day to day, but I do get to look at new interesting technologies for satellites. And as part of that, we developed our own satellite at the company I work at to help teach people how they work. This is a complete functional satellite. It fits in your pocket. It's called a pocket cube for obvious reasons. When we started talking to Microsoft about this, we realized there's an opportunity here to engage much, much, much more broadly. And that's why you're all here today. So we took this piece of technology. We understood that the microbit was being launched into schools. And that was a great way in which we could provide support for kids, support for the people who are going to be learning these new skills. And we have developed our nanosatellite kit inspired by our nanosatellite, working with the the microbit development environment. So what we've got on for you today is the opportunity to get hands-on with this technology. We've got our Build a Nanosat lab, where we're going to be using some of these sensors and doing some experiments to find out about how we use them on satellites and to learn about our atmosphere and the types of sensors that we use. And we also have a space race where you can assemble the kit and fly it on a balloon to grab some remote sensing photographic data. So please come along to those events and get stuck in. It's going to be really, really a lot of fun because we're going to be looking at the actual technology that allows us to do this.
Great, thank you very much. So this is your opportunity. Today is a chance to get hands-on. The microbit is has been launching out to schools all across the nation. 1 million of these are being given away for free. If your school doesn't have it already, then go and talk to your schools. But today is a chance to get hands-on with the microbit, with the nanosatellite. You have a chance to build. So I think that's pretty much it. Come, go have fun, go into your sessions, and then we're going to be back here 3:45 for the showcase and the awards.